Jesus is the model.
Yeah.
He is the model, you know, and he had a, he had principles that he wanted to apply, and that these principles didn't just work in the early church. Yeah. Every time we see movements rapidly happening around the world in various cultures and times, these principles were in place. That's Isn't right. that interesting? Oh,
yeah. That's right.
You, anytime you see God moving, these same principles are working.
That's right.
So wouldn't it make sense then that we should just focus on that?
Yes.
You know, look to Jesus as my, and then say, okay, how is the Holy Spirit helping you apply this to your immediate context?
We are back with another episode of the Disciple Making Leader podcast. We're joined again in the studio by Pastor Craig Etheridge today.
Hey, how are you, Brother Ben?
I am doing wonderful. Fantastic.
Glad to be here. Excited about our conversation today.
Me too, because we have another special guest, Gibson Largent.
Glad to be here. It's not often that I get invited back. Sometimes I get invited places.
And then never again.
Yes.
Then it's crickets after that.
That's normally, right.
Yeah. So you conquered your fears. You didn't run out after we did our first episode together. You're back. And so you did a great job. If you haven't listened to that, we've released an episode about the gap between church planting and disciple making with Gibson, just sharing a lot of your examples and just, you know, a lot of experience, personal experience of planting a disciple making church. And we'll kind of get into that a little more today. But you're the assistant director of Cross Creek Network.
That's right.
Church planting network that was started here out of Cross Creek Church, just a part of a, you know, I love talking about it because it's not just this strategy that you guys cooked up. It was a natural progression of a disciple making movement. And God put that on your heart to plant disciple making churches. And you've come to give your effort towards that. And thankful. I'm also thankful. We've got three guys with really great haircuts in this.
That's right.
So probably with
Ball
the
is
with
beautiful.
The, yeah, with the favorite, our favorite verse. You know, the favorite verse of a bald guy is 2 Kings 2. Go look it up, viewers. Y'all go look it up. We won't read it here, but you know, Elisha is talking about enduring a little criticism about his haircut, and he shows those boys that.
First time you hear the word "sick'em bears."
So I know I'm in Texas when I start to hear
exactly. Exactly.
College football, Texas.
No boomer down here.
No, there's no boomer.
Wrong side of the Red River down here. So again, thank you again, Gibson, for being on the episode today. And we want
to
really just press into this idea of Jesus' model is applicable to any context. And so that why his way is we just really think the way for the local church to go about developing a movement of multiplying disciples and really the best strategy we can follow. Yeah. But the unique issue and the unique problem that everybody's different. Like, you know, church in Oklahoma City is different than a church in Dallas. Yeah. Church in Philadelphia is different than a church in Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And so how do we address that? How does Jesus' model apply to those different contexts? And that's really what we want to have a conversation about today.
Yeah. You know, this is really the danger of looking at a church in Southern California saying, that's the way you got to do ministry, right? We're going to do it just like Greg Laurie does it, or, you know, or whoever, you know, just pick your brand. And then I'm going to try to do that. You know, what really stood out to me back in the late 80s and early 90s, I'm dating myself, is when Rick Warren would preach in a Hawaiian t-shirt. Or a Hawaiian shirt. Remember that back in the day? And then now, then all of a sudden, guys in Texas were wearing Hawaiian shirts.
That was the trick.
It was just that kind of thing, right? And so they're trying to apply things that worked in one context to theirs, but not seeing the same results. And by the way, this contextualization isn't just from state to state or country to country. It's even within a city.
Yep.
You have completely different contexts.
Yeah, there's different needs. There's different.
People are different. Cultures are different.
You have different gifts within the body of that local expression of the body. You have different needs in the community. Everything's different.
Right. So
I think Josephus described that there were 250 synagogues in Jerusalem in the first century.
Yeah.
And some of them we see in Acts, the synagogue of the freedmen. Itself was a unique synagogue designed for freedmen,
right?
Where in a small population city of Jerusalem, and at the turn of the, you know,
so you had one synagogue that wore Hawaiian shirts, one that wore like skinny jeans with brown boots.
I mean, probably
had a nice haircut,
something like that.
So, anyway, okay, all right. So we're gonna dig in because I think you guys bring a lot of great perspective to this. Craig, you've led churches in different, completely different contexts. Mm-hmm. Wrote a book about it. Yep. With Bold Moves. One inner city, Oklahoma City. One very suburban DFW, completely different context, really also to what the churches were enduring when you went there, kind of in different seasons and different hurts and things going on. Gibson, you've worked in church plants. You've worked in established churches. You're now working with a church planting networks. I mean, think of all the context. I mean, how many planters are in network now?
26.
So 26, and I'm sure that there's only, you know, there's probably almost 20-something different contexts, right?
That's right.
Ones in Montana.
Zambia and Tanzania and Uganda in February, and seeing the difference in the way worship and the expression of the church there, completely contextual.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think even, you know, you've got a church plant in Helena, Montana, you got a church plant in Whitefish, Montana. So I would, again, even though they're not very geographically diverse or, you know, apart, I bet you their context is completely different.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. The way in which the application of these gospel biblical principles has to be unique.
Yeah.
I think we were talking before that even the way Paul, when he was on his second missionary journey, went to Philippi in Acts 16, and he engaged people at the river where he assumed that people would be praying. That's different in the way he engaged Lydia, and of course he got arrested. So
there was that.
Paul and Silas.
Usually a riot that follows.
But it's totally different when he gets to Acts 17, when he gets to Athens, and even different in Thessalonica. So the difference in the way Paul operated was unique to the area in which he was going, but it didn't change the principles of what he was trying to do.
Yeah, you still see the pattern of, you know, of it was really like how he engaged that context and really how he went about implementing the same principles and strategy. And again, we could go back and look at that. We trace that all the way back to the life of Jesus.
Yes, that's right.
And, you know, I just find it very interesting, even this week, you know, with Disciple First, you know, have coaching calls with different people and probably in four different contexts, but we're all having the same conversation about how do we apply the strategy and principles that we see in Jesus' life to your unique context so we can be more effective, so we can have healthy churches, so we can see movements produced in these areas. And so I think it's worth giving our time to, I want you to take us back to when you first, because you were in Oklahoma for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. You went to school in Arkansas, and then also seminary in Louisville, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so all those places are completely different, but very different than Philadelphia, where you ended up planting. So take us back, kind of go back in your mind of when you first went there. What's the difference in the context in Philadelphia to all those places you've been?
Yeah, well, Philadelphia, the Northeast has a bit of a reputation of a gruff exterior, and people can be a little bit more honest. There's not a lot of friendly chatter. If you've ever been to an Eagles game or heard about Philadelphia sports fans. Yeah,
they wouldn't like this Cowboys fan over here across the table.
They would not like that at all.
You don't have to guess where you stand with people.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing. When we first got there, it was kind of refreshing because in some of the southern states where we'd lived before, you could have a very friendly conversation with somebody and then find out later that they absolutely hate you and they've been talking bad about you. But to your face, they're very friendly. But it was refreshing when we got to Pennsylvania that they're just going to tell you how they feel about you right away, right up front. And there's a level of honesty that is honestly really good. And so by the same token, that lends to a little bit more boldness with the gospel.
Okay.
Where you don't have to tiptoe around issues. You can get, if they're going to be bold with you, that's my green light to be bold right back.
Yeah.
And so it changed the way I was able to get into conversations about the gospel and about church and about spiritual formation and things like that.
So what was there once you had that bold, you know, hey, I can be more direct. What was normally maybe what was their reception to the gospel there?
Well, it varies. I had a guy threaten me, so that wasn't good. I'd seen his wife come to faith in Christ, and she was in our small group, and I got an angry phone call that she was changing, and he didn't appreciate it, and with a lot of, you know, colorful language that isn't fit for this podcast, told me in no uncertain way that he was not happy with me at all. So there, it was confrontative in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it takes people back a little bit where if you're bold with the gospel and they're just being bold with their, you know, their feelings or how they, if they're frustrated that day or angry or whatever was on their sleeve, that kind of boldness with the gospel made a deeper impact than just a surface sharing.
Yeah.
So there was a circling back,
okay,
opportunity for gospel conversations,
yeah,
to continue that didn't always, some people here were just kind of tolerate that in the cities where I'd lived, yeah, before.
So did you see, I've heard this in other places that are similar. So once the kind of the recept, once they do come to that point of faith and cross the line of faith, did you see that increasing conviction and boldness, like just as dramatic as maybe as confrontational or direct as they were, you know, opposing the gospel once they actually, you know, received Jesus and started to follow him? Did you see as just as much boldness or what?
I wish. I mean, that would be awesome if that was the case. Oftentimes our flesh operates in a bold way, in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest emotions to come out of that are anger and road rage and, yeah, you know, frustration. But when it comes to the gospel operating by the Spirit, there was a different way they approach people.
Yeah.
And so maybe they lead forward with love or with service or with grace or with forgiveness. And so, yes, there were changes, mm-hmm, to people. It may not have come out in a direct verbal boldness. Yeah.
So did you feel like you had to go faster or slower once, like say once they were in the church? How did you progress, like really progress them down the path of kind of spiritual formation?
Well, here's one of the beautiful things about the context of the Northeast, and that is that once you're kind of in with somebody, they're loyal for life.
Yeah.
I mean, you're friends forever.
Okay.
And there's a depth of trust and experience that that almost feels like you're a part of them, initiated into the family,
yeah,
in some ways. And so there was a loyalty that was really beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Within the church.
Yeah. So was that surprising to you? Like, when,
oh,
you first,
yeah,
experienced that?
Yeah. Yeah. Coming from places where there's more of a consumer mentality. If I don't like, you know, if I don't like the way you preach, or if I don't like the songs that we sing, you know, despite how good a friend you might have been with somebody,
yeah,
they'll just as easily up and leave your church and never talk to you,
yeah,
you know, again.
Yeah.
And so there was some, it's definitely refreshing to leave a bit more of a consumer,
yeah,
Christianity culture.
Huh. So, Craig, again, you've served in multiple contexts as well, but fairly similar, like both, you know, Oklahoma and Texas, right? Different in many ways, but similar,
right,
from a probably a receptivity, more of a kind of in the Bible Belt type area. But how did you have to change approaches of really engaging and coming in, maybe even with staff? Like, how did you lead a disciple-making church or begin to develop that culture in two very different places? What were the differences in those?
Yeah, I think in Oklahoma City, it was more, you know, inner city, or at least transitional neighborhood communities. It was a poor area, much more ethnically diverse area. You know, the biggest outreach we did in that that was wide open were the public schools, because,
oh, yeah,
they had no support, no help, and we could pretty much go in there and share the gospel and help and do a lot of things. When I got here, schools don't want you on their property.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need you. We got everything we need. And so it was like, you know, what worked in one spot completely wasn't working in another spot. You know, and,
yeah,
you have to kind of figure out, how do you do evangelism? How do you reach people? How do you disciple people? The context were very, very different. I think from a staff leadership standpoint, you know, part of the challenge was just the size of the staff, the scale of it was different. And so, you know, how do you invest and disciple your staff team and work together, you know, mow people, mow problems, right? You know, in a lot of ways. Yeah. You know? And so, you know, it's just different. You know, you have to kind of learn as you go. I think there's always a sense that if you're not learning, you know, then you're not growing. And so I think there was that. But I think what I've learned is that no matter, and this is kind of the point that we have of the book, His Way Still Works, is that I found that there were certain principles that transcended all these differences. And that when you stuck with those principles, those were the principles that brought about transformational change. Now, how you did those principles, it was wide open, right? It was very, very different. But the principles remained the same. And so I think that was different because if you don't have that, then you're just going in kind of blind, having to recreate everything wherever you go, hoping whatever you create works. But what we've learned is that Jesus has a way that works. And those principles, the expression of them are going to look different, but at least you know I've got to be driving down these basic principles no matter where we go. And so that is kind of the light bulb that went off for me. It's like, wait a minute, this worked here and this worked here, and they were completely different contexts, but yet the same principles were flourishing. And that's really what brought about the book, His Way Still Works. And this is really kind of the genius of the Cross Street Network is we're saying, hey, we celebrate the diversity, right? We love the fact that the body of Christ is very diverse. When we get to heaven, every language, tongue, nation, tribe, I mean, there's going to be tremendous diversity in heaven, right? And so there's all these different expressions. This is how God created us. We celebrate that, but yet there's a single way in which we make disciples who multiply to advance the kingdom. And so there's this commonality and there's a joint agreement and this partnership that we can have with one another in the face of all that diversity.
Yeah, I want to kind of give our listeners a couple of handles. When we say, hey, Jesus has these principles or ways, I want to go up a layer and just really talk. Again, you go into a lot of different detail about different, you know, really looking at his pathway of how he did that. And again, we're going to have a coupon in the show notes for you guys. If you haven't ever read His Way Still Works, you can go on there and get that and get 20% off. But just kind of this high, for our sake today, I want to talk about three things. Jesus' way is intentional, his way was highly relational, and his way was missional. So let's talk about that in maybe in your experience. Let's start with intentional. How would you explain that to somebody that Jesus' way is intentional so that they would know how to be more intentional in their context?
Well, probably if I was just having a casual conversation with a guy over coffee, probably what I would say is, have you ever seen the arrow in the FedEx logo? You know, and if he's seen it, you know, his face will light up. Oh, yeah, I totally see it. You know, if he's like, oh, I don't know, I've ever seen that, you know, then you might show him. Let me pull it up on my phone. And because once you see the arrow in the FedEx logo, you can't not see it again.
Yeah.
Right.
For me, it's that mom on the Wendy's.
On the Wendy's logo.
Right. Yeah.
You kind of zero in on it, right? Yeah. You see it and like, oh, there it is. You know, once you see it, you see it. And the same is true when you study the life of Jesus, right? It's easy to look at Jesus through the Gospels and just go, well, he went here and he did some miracles, went here and did some miracles. He talked to his disciples, he preached, and then he ends up on the cross, and it doesn't seem like there's a plan. But what we know now is that when you study the harmony of the Gospels and you study the key events in the life of Jesus, which we identify in the book 36 key events, what began to emerge from that was a pattern that Jesus actually was doing. Phase one, he was actually accomplishing something, and then there was a key pivot point. And then phase two, he was doing something different. And phase three, and then in phase four. And when you see that, you can't not see it again.
Yeah.
And that is what I'm talking about, intentionality, that Jesus actually had a very intentional plan from taking guys who were, we say irreligious, they were Jewish men, they were growing up in, you know, in the synagogue, they weren't heathen, even though you do have him engaging with the heathen, heathen people, meaning irreligious, but taking someone and then introducing them to the gospel, training them, helping them connect in community, and training them up to multiply. And this we see replicated even in the book of Acts as well. And so there was an intentional strategy that Jesus used, and that strategy works in any context, planting, large established church, rural, urban, any ethnic group, any language group, house church, it doesn't matter. You know, you throw whatever is out there. These same principles, these same phases, these same steps that Jesus took are transferable from age to age, culture to culture, language to language. And I think that was clearly on purpose, right? Yeah.
But how frustrating would it have been if he said, go and make disciples, and they weren't transferable, and they didn't work in every context, and they didn't work in every culture?
Because they're going to places that are incredibly diverse.
Right. If he said, start here in Jerusalem, and then go to Judea and Samaria, and then to the end of the world, and I'm sending you out, but then, oh yeah, it doesn't work everywhere.
Oh yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah. Thomas, it doesn't work in India, so you're going to struggle over there,
yeah,
right, or wherever. Yeah. Or Paul, it doesn't work in Europe or whatever the case may be. So I think that you're right. What he gave us, and I think sometimes we forget, Matthew 28 is not, he didn't state that in the front end. This is a summary of what he's been doing with them on the back end.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, okay, all that I've been doing with you for the last 3.5 years, and he summarizes it in the Great Commission. It's this beautiful, simple summary of what he's been doing with them, not only identifying the product, but also the process in there. But they knew it. It was a thumbnail summary because they knew what he did with them, and they were going to turn around and do that with others.
When I think of the intentionality of Jesus, I always love Matthew 4. 18:19, that passage right there when he's, you know, it's 18 months into his ministry, he's approaching fishermen, you know, he's approaching them on the Sea of Galilee, and in that he's casting vision, follow me and I will make you fishers of men.
Yeah.
What I always look when we talk about the intentionality of Jesus is I think he had a clear end in mind of where he was taking them, what he was going to produce them in at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think as churches, that's where we go, hey, you need to have a definition of disciple.
Right.
That's the end. And that dictates the process. Mm. And it needs to be an intentional process. And again, this week, four different churches. We're talking to churches in Nepal. We're talking to churches in Montana. We're talking to churches, a cowboy church in Texas. We're talking to a highly educational model church in Tennessee. Every one of them, we're having the same conversation. How do we become more intentional? How do we apply Jesus' model? How do you define the target? All those things. And it's just, it's almost so simple. And it's once you see it, you can't see any way else.
Yeah.
But again, his way was intentional, but it was also relational. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a key piece, just as key. I mean, it's a pivot point for most churches, because I think, again, we've talked about it multiple times. We lean in the North, especially North American church.
Yes.
It's all about education. The more knowledge, and again, we need knowledge. We need, knowledge of God leads, it really does lead us to, knowing him, know more about his character. But if all we do is pump on knowledge with no end, then are we just become a bunch of Pharisees, or what? What are we? We know a lot of things, but we're not living those things. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think how do we become more relational? So, how would you enter into a conference, or how have you, and say, how do we really be, lead out this intent or this relational aspect of Jesus' way?
Well, I think you see it in the Gospels really clearly when Jesus said this akalutheo, follow me. Mm-hmm. They literally left and began journeying with him, which included, meal breaks and
campfires,
travel.
Think about how many campfires they were around with Jesus.
Yeah. If eating together and laughing together and delighting in each other in fellowship and in conversation. I think that it's apparent that Jesus was deeply personal.
Yeah.
And you see it in a few places where Martha and Mary come up and Jesus is weeping and there's an overflow of emotion. In Luke 9, he comes down off the mountain and he seems a little bit irritated. Oh, you perverse generation, you're always seeking a sign. But it gives us a glimpse into the humanity of Jesus. We'll transfer that idea into us as pastors, ministers, church planning network. There has to be a personal nature to our ministry.
Yeah.
That I think one of the beautiful things about disciples is that you have the dust of your master. What's that phrase, Craig?
Yeah, you're walking in the dust of your rabbi.
Yeah, that may you be sprinkled in the, or something like that. Mm-hmm. That you have his limp, and you have that. There's a sense in which you're like him, and that doesn't come from academic.
Right.
processes. That comes from personal interaction.
Yeah. And let me just say that there are some people that push back on this because they say, well, you know, back when Jesus was doing that, they, you know, they quit their jobs and they hung out with him 24/7 and they did everything. And I can't quit my job. And we don't live in that kind of culture anymore. And we're in a fast pace and I got ball games to go to, and I got a wife at home that needs to be there. And I got, you know, I got all these demands, and best thing I can give is an hour a week or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And so that doesn't work. I mean, I have heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And really my response is, okay, yes, we, there are some differences in the pace and the walk that Jesus had to ours. But we see the Apostle Paul talking to the church in Thessalonica and saying, you know, I'm like a mama to you. I'm like a daddy to you. I gave my life. And he would, they were in a more urban setting, you know, in their day. And it wasn't the same as what Jesus did. So the point is that Paul had investments in people, just like Jesus had him. Now, they may have looked very different. You know, I don't know that Timothy and Titus and all those guys were always tracking with him all the time. They would kind of come and go. You know, he would send them somewhere and they'd hang out and they'd come back. But the relational piece was there.
Yes.
And so I think that, you know, whatever context you're in, you know, you want to lean into that. Now, in international context, we find that relationships are really high.
Yeah.
Gib and I were in Rome one time, and we were actually in this piazza, and there was this huge crowd. And so we started asking, oh, is there a concert here tonight? And he goes, no, this is what we do every night.
Yeah,
we just hang out. It would be weird for you to be like in your room watching TV, you know, but we live in America where everybody goes in, closes the garage door, and nobody goes out. And so there are cultural distinctives, yep. Right? But regardless of the cultural distinctives, the importance that we're not just trying to get information. It's not just you can pick this up through a podcast and listen to sermons and reading the book,
yeah.
Right? This comes with an application of true, real love and relationship that is necessary for this process to work.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about spiritual form. You can call it whatever, spiritual formation, sanctification, really developing a disciple. Number one, it's a work of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. But I think in partnership with that, people move effectively down that, you know, progress down that the spiritual pathway and really develop through relational investment and relational invitations.
Yeah.
I mean, why did I take a step forward out of just things that I'd done my whole life of being in a church and just being a church member or just being in group, something completely different? Is because someone I knew, someone I cared about, someone I liked invited me into something different. And then I saw the value, and God used that environment for something different. Same thing, invited to Zambia for the first time. I mean, I had never been on a mission trip before in my life. Well, why did I go halfway across the world with a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old at home and give up 2 weeks of vacation? I didn't do it because I wanted to necessarily. I did it because I saw people who it had impacted their life, and they loved me, they cared about me, and they invited me. And I just think that's what we mean by relational investment and relational invitation is whatever your context, you have to be more relational with people.
Yeah, that's really good, Ben.
It's more effectively move. I mean, it's just a practical reality, in my opinion.
That's right. Those are principles that apply everywhere. Doing things on purpose and with intentionality, and being personal, being vulnerable and making yourself known and being known by others. That's a critical aspect that we see in Jesus' ministry, for sure.
You know, I'm so thankful for the guys that invested in me, mm-hmm. invited me into a process and invested in me. And when you do that with somebody else, you're just kind of passing that along.
Yeah.
And that really is the model of Jesus. Very intentional, highly relational.
And I see it as the anecdote for this lack of commitment we're seeing in churches today. We've talked a lot about that and getting, you know, everybody's talking about we can't get people to commit, can't keep people to show up. We have to go deeper in relationship.
That's
have
right.
to. All right, so now let's talk about the third one, missional. Jesus was highly missional. What Jesus did, his investment in his first followers led to a movement. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about a way, you know, you and me have talked about this multiple times, Gibson, of a way that you've kind of a strategy or approach that really is super practical but very missional to kind of address, like, hey, we're going into an area, I'm going to train, you know, especially maybe in an international context of applying this missional strategy of Jesus, super practical. It's called the Four Fields. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Four Fields is a training that majors on principles. Mm-hmm. And so it's applicable in any context. I use it for short-term missions. I use it to train in long-term missions. I use it for people who want to be a missionary in their own city and live like a missionary, which captures the heart, by the way, of the Father, in that He is a sending Father and Jesus tells us to go. And so as a Christ follower, our life should be missional. Yeah. No matter where we live and no matter what our profession is, there should be a missional nature in it. But it takes some education and skill development. Mm-hmm. To live a missional way. Otherwise, you just go through rhythms and routines, and we tend to slough to, you know, a comfortable routine in life, and we can lose missional zeal.
Yeah.
Have you seen that, where people cool down?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's all of us go through that.
Yeah, and you begin to see people, and then you realize, I had opportunities with 20 lost people today, and I never engaged them. Yeah. One of the saddest points of my life as a pastor was when I lost compassion for lost people and was just content to go study the Bible in a room and was really cut off from people. I lost some of this missional zeal that Jesus never lost, right? I came to seek and save the lost. Mm-hmm. The Son of Man came to serve, not to be served, and to give His life as a ransom for many. So how do we maintain this missional zeal? I think there are a few things, some tools that help in that. One is to see the field that God has placed you in as a field. I'm not a farmer, Craig. I don't know if you know that. You tell stories about shucking corn.
Oh, yeah, man. That's where I was raised for sure.
But if you saw a field that was filled with weeds and rocks and boulders, we drove through Rhode Island once, and we saw this wall, this rock wall on the side, and it dawned on me, somebody had to clear that field. Those rocks were all over the field. Somebody had to go in and manually pull them. And so seeing your area as a field that needs to be prepared.
Yeah.
Pulling weeds, moving rocks, moving boulders, getting a plow in there so that the soil is ripe for the seed of the gospel. That takes effort, prayer, service. It takes work to prepare a field.
Yeah.
And you can prepare a field anywhere you go in the world if you're there for any length of time. But seeing it as a field, I think, is the perspective change that has to happen to keep a missional mindset.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And again, people just need some handles to really start to do that in investment. Here at the church, Craig, how are you helping church members that are part of the life of the body here? How are you helping them kind of capture that missional mindset?
Yeah, you know, when I think about missional, I think of multiplication. You know, missional is sharing the gospel, multiplying your life and the lives of others. I think that's kind of what I think about when I think about mission, bearing fruit. You know, I think about John 15:8, you know, I chose you to go bear fruit and your fruit would remain. And so this idea of proving yourself to be my disciple by bearing much fruit. So I think that's when I think about missional, are you advancing the gospel? Are you investing your lives in others? Are you multiplying your life? And so one of the ways we do that is, we use the Grow series as a tool for discipling, leaders, people, not just leaders. And we have a whole strategy of how to live like a missionary. You know, we talk about, God has put you where you live, learn, work, and play, right? And so these are areas kind of like fields that you're in. And so where's the opportunity? Who are other believers in there that you can partner with? You know, what are some things you can do? Because, you know, maybe where your kids went to school is a very fruitful field, but then that dries up, you know, because they graduate, they move on. And now that field's not as fruitful as maybe your work field or maybe where you work out or things like that. So I think through that, we're constantly trying to ask people, where has God planted you, and what does it look like for you to be on mission with Him there?
Yeah.
And and help and helping to train them with some practical tools they can use to do.
And I think that gives such, because again, being a part of that experience here, I see that as it gives me confidence. It gives me, you're not just telling me to live a missional life. You're not just saying, hey, this is what you need to do. You need to have compassion for the lost. You're actually helping people learn how to abide, number one, because that compassion really does come from the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm abiding, you're also equipping the people here in the life of the church through multiple different ways, you know, with the Grow Series, but then also giving them opportunity to experience that for themselves. Because I think that, to me, you know, again, what do we see from Jesus, right? We see as soon as he called them to abide and follow him, he took them out and they started serving and they saw that God could actually use them.
Yeah.
And to me, that was very formative early on. They're like, and humbling. Oh, God actually could choose to use me to, you know, he doesn't have to do that.
Yeah, we had a guy that in our church that came to Christ about 2 years ago, and just super neat to hear his story and just the guys investing in him and training him up, and you know he's starting to impact his family and his friends, and it's, you know, it's neat to see that. He went on one of his first mission trips like this to Montana with one of our plants. And got to share his story. And of course, there wasn't a dry eye in the place. Yeah. And, you know, him coming back, he's so fired up because, you know, look, you know, God used my story. Those are transformational moments.
Very much so.
Those are spiritual, what I call spiritual agitators, right? They just agitate us up and cause us to grow in a rapid way. I got another guy that I just took through the Grow Series. We just graduated him off last week, but he's going to be on a plane with me. To Zambia in a couple of months, and he's coming with me, and he's going to see what it's all about, and he's going to get to preach and teach and do those kind of things, and this is going to be a spiritual agitator for him. So you're exactly right. Bringing people along with you in engagement are huge pivot points of growth for them.
I'm just a show me person, Craig. I mean, tell me all day long in a classroom, but take me out and show me once, and it just something clicks for me. I don't know if it's my learning style. I don't know what it is, but when you take someone and you show them, that's why mission trips are so important for spiritual formation.
They really are.
You see God at work in another culture, in another place, outside of your routine and rhythm, and you're experiencing God in ways that you couldn't in a classroom kind of information-only environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I think we can all trace some way, shape, or form, but even the three, a couple of our guys that are with Disciple First, one's on staff now with Cross Creek and with Zach, all three of us, we were church members.
Yeah.
With Keith, myself, and with Zach, we were church members in this, you know, being trained this way. Yeah. And all of us can all trace back to an international setting on an experience like that where God began to unpack, hey, maybe one day you could leave the business world and do and give kind of your energy towards mission and towards ministry. And so we can all trace back to that thing. So I think it's pivotal to get people. It doesn't have to be international. It's great. Get you out of your comfort zone. But I mean, even, you know, if a church is out there listening, leaders are listening, there's things you can do right here in your community to get people out of their comfort zone and go serve in a homeless ministry or do whatever. Being uncomfortable is how we grow.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we're like so scared of making people uncomfortable that we're, you know, maybe we need to get people a little more uncomfortable in a safe way.
No doubt.
And do that. But so Jesus' way is intentional, it's relational, and it's missional. And I think if we can begin to steer our ministries wherever we are, those are great guiding points to do that. Any last words you'd like to kind of share with any leaders or anybody listening before we sign off?
You know, I would just add, Ben, that, again, what we're trying to drive home here is that your context may be very different, but there are principles that are transferable.
That's right.
And so if you're listening, you go, okay, what exactly were those principles again? That's why we exist, to help you to identify them clearly and let you wrestle with and let the Spirit of God, you know, direct you as to what that looks like. At Disciple First, we're not here to tell you, well, you should be doing things like Cross Creek, right? Exactly. You should not be doing it. It should look very different, right?
Yeah.
And so we celebrate that. We want to help you discover that. I think the Holy Spirit wants to reveal that to you, right? So it's not at all about, hey, you should be like us.
That's right.
What we're saying is Jesus has set the model. Yeah. We need to be more like him, right? We must decrease. He must increase. And so what does it look? What did Jesus do? How can we then model that in a way that you can then apply that in your immediate context? That's the beauty. That's what we celebrate.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we celebrate.
Craig, how many, I guess any final comment I would have is, how many conference treadmill, you know, hamster wheel that we were on in the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah. It felt like every time we went, and this carried over after I left Oklahoma City and went to seminary and then on to other places. It seemed like from 2000 to 2010, I went to 10 years worth of conferences. And at the end of it, I could not. I'm going to vent just for a minute. All right,
I might start twitching.
I might just.
Hey, we're here for you. Okay, we're here. We can counsel right here. We can.
I hated conferences.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I hated the most about it is a platformed person telling me what worked for them, and me understanding, well, that's not going to work for me, and that doesn't work everywhere, and that's. It was an example of something that, and maybe that's my own issue, but I hated things that weren't contextual.
Yeah.
That didn't give us some idea of, here's a principle. The way you put it into practice might look totally different. It doesn't mean I have to go home and wear a Hawaiian shirt.
Right.
You know? That it bothered me to not have a principle. So I think we try to teach in a way that says, and not only teach it, but to come alongside you. I went to Uganda and I went to Zambia in February, and to walk alongside these guys and to say, let's approach your community in a way that these principles can be applied for you here. Perfect. It doesn't look anything like it is in places where I've lived before.
Yeah.
You're going to teach me how it works.
Wow. You know, Gib, the conference hamster wheel, like you described, honestly, I think is the source of a lot of pastors that feel like failures.
Oh, I felt
because
that.
Because your platform, here's a successful guy. He's got a hot band, a fast growing church. And what he lays out is like, well, man, if you were smart enough, you'd have figured this out, you know, and I could do this in your area. And, you know, you're not as good as me. I mean, nobody's saying that, but that's what's being heard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that person now, that personality is the model.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that robs Jesus of his glory, quite honestly, because Jesus is the model.
Yeah.
He is the model, you know, and he had principles that he wanted to apply, and that these principles didn't just work in the early church.
Yeah.
Every time we see movements rapidly happening around the world in various cultures and times, these principles were in place.
That's
Isn't
right.
that interesting?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Anytime you see God moving, these same principles are working.
That's right.
So wouldn't it make sense then that we should just focus on that?
Yes.
You know, look to Jesus as my, and then say, okay, how is the Holy Spirit helping you apply this to your immediate context? Now, all of a sudden, you're not dependent on someone's personality or their facility or their band or whatever. You're depending on the Holy Spirit to reveal to you how to live these principles out. And
That's
he
right.
is eager to do that.
Yeah.
He is eager to do that. And then you see pastors that are, hey, it's okay for you to be at whatever size church you're at. You know, it's okay for you to be you. God called you. He didn't call you to be like somebody else. And now you see them being, you know, their chest is out. You know, they're excited that God's using them. They're winning, you know, in the sense that they are living out the purpose God has for them, living out these basic principles. And so it builds up the church, builds up the leaders instead of tearing them down.
Yeah. And I would, you know a tree by its fruit. So I would ask leaders out there, the strategy you are currently adopting and operating in, how's that going for you?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us would probably say, if we're really honest, we're probably frustrated, or we feel like we're not enough, or, you know, there's a lot of that. And if there's any of that, I would say you're chasing the wrong thing.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think we could all go back to, hey, how can our ministries look more and more like Jesus? Because you guys here, it's not a one and done thing. It's not, oh, we've adopted the model. It's constantly going back and auto-correcting and saying, hey, how can we look more and more like how Jesus made disciples?
And we're always at work at it. You know, we're never holding our church up as a model.
Nope. Yeah.
In fact, when I go speak or something, you know, I always feel like, I don't want to be that guy.
That's right.
Because we're not holding ourselves. If we want to hold up
examples.
I can show you
how we're
doing
it. I
can be a great model for how not to do
stuff. Me too. That's
my
best.
How to screw stuff up. I mean,
I'm good at that.
I've done that really well, you know. So we're not ever saying that we are the model. We're always lifting up Jesus as the model and saying, hey, we're pursuing this too.
Yeah.
And the things that sometimes that we produce through Disciple First, it's like, hey, we discovered this thing that helped us, you know, maybe the
sharing it.
One beggar telling another beggar where to find food.
That's right. We're just sharing what we've learned, but we're not holding ourselves up as a model. We love the local church. We love pastors. We love church planters, and we know what it's like to be in the trenches, and we just need to encourage each other and build each other up. And so this is what we're doing here.
Yeah. Well, Craig, thank you for being on, sharing your experience. Gibson, you as well, for being our special guest today with a great haircut.
It's a little puffy today. I need to mow
it down. There we go. Yeah. So, but thank you again for your experience and your wisdom, just things of, again, trying to just be a leader that's really following Jesus. And I know that of you, and I appreciate that of you. You as a listener, again, hopefully, if you've been listening to us long enough, you know that we are no experts. We are here just to serve you and help you. Like I said, any way that we can connect with you, we would love to do that. Always check the show notes for any coupons, for any connections, anything that we've talked about during this episode. We would love to connect with you more and carry on this conversation while you're at home.